We are once again live to tape here at the 2025 NRA annual meetings in Atlanta, Georgia. And I am so pleased to have with us on the program. We've had him on before, but it's nice to actually be across the table for Mr. John Comerford, the executive director of NRA's Institute for Legislative Action. John, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Cam. Appreciate you having me, and thanks for being here in Atlanta.
Listen, no other place I'd rather be this weekend than right here. This is amazing. We've got a great turnout for a Friday.
Absolutely.
As you well know, while the doors open on Friday, the events actually start a couple of days before, right? So last night, I had the pleasure of being at the Chick-fil-A National College Football Hall of Fame. For a Ring of Freedom event. And I gotta tell you, I mean, that was really incredible. We saw a message from President Donald Trump.
Yes.
Which was great to see. We saw the celebration and the recognition of 50 years of the Institute for Legislative Action.
That's exactly right.
And it was nice to see Chris Cox, former NRA ILA executive director, there on hand. Tell me, I mean, this is a celebration of our right to keep and bear arms this weekend. We're celebrating the victories. We're trying to warn people about the threats that exist, right? But we want people to be happy. We want people to be energized. And really, we want people to walk out of here raring to go and ready to defend their right to keep and bear arms, right? So what are your goals for this weekend?
You know, reconnect with our members, first and foremost. Since we've had a lot of changes at NRA, we've talked about this, but it's also creating confidence in the American gun owner and what we're doing at NRA. And creating confidence in our existing members and bringing back the legions of patriots that have joined our membership roles over the years. So we want to bring them back. But it's always a homecoming of sorts. We have business meetings, of course, like any other large organization. And we have a notoriously large board of directors that people like to talk about. But the vast majority of that is behind us in the week before. And it's always refreshing to get down here on the floor of the show and to connect with real everyday Americans and our members. And that's critically important for me because, as you know, I live in the swamp outside of Washington, D.C. So I tell people all the time, you have to get outside of the Beltway and get out in real America and see what people are actually talking about.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, outside of the Beltway in Virginia, I've been trying to serve as my local Paul Revere, which warning the citizenry about the threats that exist right there in the Commonwealth. I mean, we've got statewide elections coming up in November.
Yes, we do.
And, you know, Governor Glenn Youngkin vetoed, what, 24 gun control bills this year? And you've got Abigail Spanberger, the Democratic nominee, who has said she'll sign every one that gets to her desk, right?
Exactly right.
I mean, it's not hyperbole to say that if the Democrats win this election in November, this time next year, Virginia's going to be East California. It's going to be South Jersey, right?
You're exactly right. And we know anyone listening who lives in Virginia can't be surprised by what would happen if we don't elect a pro-gun governor in November. They did it 2 years in a row. Youngkin had to veto the same tranche of bills last year as he did this year. And anyone who had their doubts about Governor Glenn Youngkin, I mean, I think he's proven that he is a bona fide Second Amendment supporter.
Yep.
The only thing I wish is that he had an ability to have another term because he was a good candidate and he's been a good governor for the Commonwealth. And hopefully Winston Sears gets in there. But we need all of gun owners to come out and vote. And it's critically, critically important in Virginia. We know what's coming. And there's a lot of other issues that are important to your listeners outside of this one that'll have impacts as well. So people need to get registered first and foremost if you're not. Get out and vote and make sure your friends and family vote as well because we know what's coming.
Absolutely. All right, so let's turn our attention to the Capitol Hill for a second.
Yes, sir.
Unlike Virginia, where the Democrats control both of the legislative chambers, Republicans control the House, narrow margins, control the Senate, fairly narrow margins. They don't have 60, unfortunately. What does that mean for things like national right to carry reciprocity, the Protect Second Amendment Act that I wrote about a couple of days ago that would protect the rights of tenants from being evicted if their landlord takes, you know, any federal funds? There are so many good bills, so many important bills, but that is the challenge, right? If you don't have 60 votes in the Senate, you got to figure out another way to get this stuff enacted. Maybe it's through reconciliation. What do you think realistically the chances are that we're going to get some of these measures to President Trump's desk?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. We have a 60 vote threshold in the United States Senate. As of today, anything is possible in Congress. and particularly in the Senate. So the goal from NRA's standpoint and other gun groups as well is working together to try to get these bills, as many as we can, out of the House and into the Senate. Because as you know with the rules can be changed. I'm not advocating for a change in the filibuster, but I wouldn't be doing my job if we didn't try everything we could to get these bills into the Senate, make them available if a must-pass vehicle comes along, if a rule change happens, if a change happens in the parliamentarian's office. So we're working right now, particularly H.R. 38. It has the most co-sponsors, so we can start there. It has over 180 co-sponsors. As your listeners know, you need 218. But depending on the day, that number can change.
Right.
But we are over 180, which is the most co-sponsors since 2017 when that bill successfully passed out of the House. So we're working that. We're appreciative for Chairman Jordan on holding a markup on that, and obviously Chairman Hudson's leadership to get that across the line. But there's a list of other bills dealing with NFA, fixing NFA issues, suppressors, of course, and the Hearing Protection Act and the Shush Act and other items, veterans issues. There's a ton of quality legislation that would benefit America's gun owners, our veterans, everyone else, but we got to get it out of the House and then we'll deal with the Senate. In terms of reconciliation, you're hearing that on the news every single day. It is a behemoth. It is a very unique process, but it really boils down to something called the birdbath, which is a bill is going to go through the Senate parliamentarian's office, and if it doesn't pass the test, it can't go in the reconciliation process. And in a rudimentary form, it has to deal more with tax. So
okay,
there's items on the table we're working on right now that do deal with tax. It's not ready for prime time yet, but we're working with the parliamentarian's office and some champions in the U.S. Senate to try to get that done. And we're going to use everything in our power to take advantage of President Trump's second term in office and his respect for the Second Amendment.
To that end, I mean, we can talk about what's going on in the executive branch, right? Under Joe Biden, I mean, it was a whole of government attack on the firearms industry, on gun owners. We saw this, weaponized ATF, the gun control advocates officing in the White House itself, or at least the executive office building, right? I mean, they didn't just have a seat at the table. They had a nameplate on the door.
Sure.
Under the Trump administration, I know that things aren't moving as fast as I would like, but we are starting to see movement, right? The formation of the Second Amendment Task Force at DOJ, I keep going back to the historic nature of the DOJ Civil Rights Division. That investigation of the LA Sheriff's Office that is ongoing right now, that is the first time in history that the DOJ Civil Rights Division has investigated a violation of our Second Amendment rights. That's historic.
Absolutely.
Right? And, Attorney General Bondi, Assistant Attorney General Dillon have both indicated that this is the start. This isn't the finish, right? So where would you like to see the DOJ investigate? I mean, obviously, it's a target-rich environment.
Sure.
But are there, any particular jurisdictions, any particular issues where you think DOJ really needs to focus immediately, put on the front burner?
Well, what's pending right now, as everyone knows, is the president's executive order, and he asked for a report. He asked for the report within 30 days. I know for a fact that a draft of the report was done within 30 days. However, it wasn't ready yet because there are issues at hand that need to be addressed that need compliance with the APA, with the Administrative Procedures Act.
Okay.
And for the listeners that don't know, that's the rulemaking process. So when Joe Biden wanted to ban the most popular firearm accessory in America at the time, pistol brace, you have to go through the rulemaking process, which is a public comment period, a final rule, etc. You have to go through a similar process to remove a rule and get rid of it.
Yeah.
So hypothetically, if they were going to announce in this report to the executive order the ending of the brace ban and ending of frame and receiver rule and everything else, they need to comply with that process. So that's complex. So I think there was some time needed to make sure it's perfect. I'm not going to quote the individual, but I'm going to give you a quote from some senior employee in the White House that said, "We've never seen anything like this report and you're going to like it." So not to leave everybody on edge, but I'm confident with that because, quite frankly, whatever we get out of them is a heck of a lot better than what we had the last 4 years.
Yeah. Well, I will say, again, I'm not going to name my source because I don't want to burn my source. But I was talking to somebody fairly high up in an alphabet agency who would be in a position to know. And they said, don't worry, you know, all of these rules, because my question was, okay, so we've heard the intent to repeal the pistol brace rule with the engaged in the business rule. I had asked, well, what about the frame and receiver rule that, you know, the Supreme Court upheld under Vanderstock? And I was told, like, yeah, that's on its way out, too.
Yes.
You've been told that as well?
Yeah, they're working on that now. They asked us for a report on items that NRA would like to see included. And I know other groups submitted different things, but NRA submitted a more than 30-page document to the White House, which we will post on our website once we see what the report looks like. But the very first page is repealing the frame of receiver rule. And that report ends with reopening the machine gun amnesty. So if you can't, if you don't ask for it, you're not going to get it.
Right.
Okay, we want to make sure every base is covered across the whole spectrum of items that need to be addressed. And we have a DOJ, we have an ATF now with a new acting director and some ascension within the leadership there that seems to respect the Second Amendment. Again, it's the ATF. So I want their actions to speak for their intentions there.
Yeah.
And we'll see where it ends up. But for those people who had concerns about Attorney General Bondi, I can understand where they were coming from because we heard what she said, notably in 2018. However, her actions are speaking for themselves. She's attacked the issue. She's making changes. I mean, quite frankly, I don't know how else to put it. The creativity on the Schumer rider and restoration of rights by figuring out that that only applied to the ATF and they can move that back into regular DOJ, into the Office of the Pardon Attorney, it's pretty good. I mean, that's an issue we've been advocating for. So that was done. Also, people have to keep in mind, it takes a long time to fill all of these political appointee positions across the new government when you have a new administration. And they're rushing those now across the Department of Interior, which is important for public lands access and shooting ranges and hunting, but also a DOJ and ATF. In the end, though, I'll leave you this on that issue. The ultimate goal is to have a Senate-confirmed director of the ATF that respects the Second Amendment, understands what gun owners go through, understands what the firearms industry goes through, and creates uniform policy that we can follow if required. We want as minimal as required.
Right.
And you know, there's some out there would say abolish the ATF. That's fine. However, what happens to the job that needs to be done in the meantime? Because there's still statute out there.
Right.
So who's going to process your NFA paperwork? Yes, we should get rid of the NFA too. However, but the reality is it exists today. So who's processing your suppressor paperwork and all the forms that you need? So that work needs to be done. And ATF it needs a lot of work. But they're working on it from what I see.
Yeah. Is it so just real quick, I mean, is it your understanding that at some point President Trump will nominate a permanent director?
I don't know that for a fact. I would think so. And we're advocating for that position. And I know other groups are as well.
Okay.
There have been a few qualified names. I'll just say qualified names that are out there. We don't get involved in the nomination process at that level.
Right.
Unless there is a nominee. And if they're worthy of NRA member support, then we weigh in. But you need a permanent director. And I'll briefly tell you why this process, because it's unique. We had Kash Patel. The reason he was available is you can only have an acting director of an agency that is a political appointee if they've been Senate confirmed somewhere else. So he qualified for the job. That's technically why you only see career employees as acting directors of agencies.
Oh, gotcha.
And it gets a little more complex that because it was in the first 60 days of the Trump administration, he could serve in that role for 300 days. But as we know, running the FBI is one heck of a job.
Right.
So they moved in the Secretary of the Army.
Which is also a heck of a job.
Yes, right. Absolutely. But it was also Senate confirmed. He was confirmed 5 days after Cash was appointed acting.
Okay.
He can now serve for 210 days because it was done after 60 days of a first administration.
Gotcha.
So within, let's just say 200 days from now, we will know they will either have to put another acting in or we'll have a nominee.
All right. Well, listen, John, again, I really appreciate you taking a couple minutes. I know you are incredibly busy here this weekend, but it is always good talking with you.
I look forward to doing this again in the future. We, you know, would love to have you on as often as you can spare the time.
Absolutely.
And keep NRA members and gun owners up to date about what's going on with the NRA, the Institute for Legislative Action, and our Second Amendment rights in Washington, D.C., and all 50 state capitals.
And I'll just leave you. I hope your listeners stay tuned because there's good things coming. Good things for NRA, but good things for gun owners through the administration. And keep an eye on what we're doing in the courts because we're extremely active on the litigation side, and it's break glass in case of emergency in some of these states, and we're working together with all the other pro-gun groups.
Which is great to see. I talked with Bill Bockenberg about that earlier. I love the fact that you're seeing this coalition building. I think it is tremendous for the NRA. I think it's tremendous for our Second Amendment rights. So
FPC, SAFGO, they're all doing good work, and they're all in it for the right reasons. So we'll work with anyone who has the right reasons at heart. So thank you, Cam. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, John.